Hola, hola, y bienvenidos a Tu Salud, the definitive podcast for Latine and Indigenous health policy, where we talk about all things Latine, policy, and our health. I am Dr. Ceci Aquino, Executive Director at the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California. And today, I am joined by a trendsetter, Supervisor Hilda Solis, representing District 1 in the LA County Board of Supervisors. Today, we'll be talking about being the first, but not the last, the power of local, state, and federal partnerships, and the importance of advancing mental health services for our communities. Y con eso, let's get started. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited to have you on A Tu Salud. And maybe let's start there with your personal story. Can you tell us a little bit more about you, who you are, what makes you you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I'm glad that we ran into each other in Sacramento at a recent advocacy day, I think, for your group.
Yes.
Healthcare individuals, healthcare access, as well as Prometoras. And yeah, I was so fortunate to be able to share some space. Yes. And really see people that I hadn't seen in a long time and share the work that we have been doing for so many years. But I can start by just telling you that, you know, I grew up out in the San Gabriel Valley in LA County in a community known as La Puente, which is largely Latino, working class, immigrant, and, you know, community. And my parents were both immigrants. My father was Mexicano and my mother was Nicaraguense. They raised us, you know, seven children, and I'm the middle child.
Wow.
So it was kind of, you know, a very close-knit family.
Yes.
Working really hard, helping each other out. And at times, you know, growing up, you have so much more responsibility in a Latino close-knit family when you have to rely on each other, because both my parents afterwards had to both work. So we had major responsibilities as young children growing up. And that really, I think, impacted me a lot, because it taught me to be independent, but it also taught me that, you know, to remember the hardships, the hardships that we struggle with, and to also overcome them, but also look for other people that can also help you in that journey to face whatever it is you have to face, and share and give you hope and opportunity. And I really believe that of my own family, that that's what they did. Even though they didn't have a lot of wealth, they were working class families. My dad worked in a battery recycling plant. He actually became a shop steward, a leader in his union to organize Latino workers who were exposed in very treacherous situations. I mean, very harmful to be exposed to lead poisoning. And my father at that time worked really hard to make sure that the workers there had protections. So I kind of learned some of that as I was growing up. My mother also had to go to work in a factory and was on her feet for like 10 hours a day and just struggling. In those days, minimum wage was like $1.60 an hour. Can you believe that? Wow. And even to work overtime, you would get paid maybe 10, 25 cents.
My goodness.
My mother would do it because it meant more funding for her kids, whatever it was, zapatos, calcetines, or whatever it was, or more frijoles on the table. She made those sacrifices. And, you know, that's something that you remember that you grow up with. I grew up in a you know, I wouldn't say a normal middle class, because, you know, what's normal? We didn't even know we were poor. We qualified for the food lunch program, the summer programs that they had for us after school and in the parks. And as I was going through my education, I, you know, unfortunately, like many Latino kids, you're not always pushed to do your best or to be in that situation where someone's watching out for you to tell you, hey, what about going to college? What about these other opportunities? What are you going to do after you graduate? And, you know, I didn't have any of those role models in my family. So it was pretty hard. And I wasn't the only one going through that.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, my life changed when one counselor had asked me, Hilda, what are you going to do after college? You're going to go, or no, I'm sorry, what are you going to do after high school? Are you thinking of going to college? And I looked at him and I said to him, his name was Mr. Sanchez. I said, you got to be kidding me. My parents expect me to go to work.
Right.
They want me to be independent
right.
and, you know, go and kind of handle what it is you need to face in your life. We're here for you, but that's going to be your responsibility. Yeah. And so it didn't even dawn on me at that time to think about college. But Mr. Sanchez said, you know what, Hilda, if you really want to go to college and think about it in that way, I can help you, and I can help you fill out paperwork and your financial aid forms, because you come from a low-income first-generation family, that you'd qualify for all this financial assistance. And I thought, what are you talking about? My mom and dad don't have any money to give me. Don't worry about it, Hilda. I will sit down and we'll work with your parents. And I go, well, that's half the mountain to climb right there, is getting the parents to also understand that, hey, it's okay for my mija to go to college. And, you know, fortunately, at that same high school, you're also assigned a counselor by the alphabet, if I recall, who you meet maybe once a year and they just check off the little boxes. That counselor had told me that I should not go to college, that I was not college material, and said that in a meeting that we had with my mother. Yeah. And I'll never forget, my mother was really upset and hurt, and she was, you know, cheering up. And so we kind of left that situation, at least me feeling like, you know, I'm not going to let him try to tell me what I can and can't do when I have somebody else, Mr. Sanchez, telling me that I could be something, that I could, you know, have doors of opportunity open for me to go to higher education. And so at the end of the day, I was very fortunate. I applied. I got admitted to Cal Poly Pomona, and I got financial aid. I actually got to live on campus, which was very necessary, because if I had stayed home in community, I know that my family obligations and all that would have taken me over, and I wouldn't have focused on my education. So in that sense, my parents, it was hard for them, but they ended up in the end understanding that it was important. So those are, you know, I like to share that with people because I think it's really critical. And going back to that high school counselor who told me I wasn't college material, you know what he told me? He said, why don't you be a clerk or a secretary like your older sister and go work for the county and you're going to be fine. And when I look back at what he said, I think about it and I say to myself, well, guess what? You were half correct, maybe, because I did get the title of Secretary of Labor for the United States government, the first Latina to serve in that position.
Amazing.
And when I tell people that story, they go, wow, you know, how is that possible? But that's the whole point, that things are possible when there's opportunities.
Yes.
So I think people like Mr. Sanchez, but I also think the university campus, because I was very involved in the student government, MECHA, student organization representing Latino students. And that also kind of taught me, you know, to find my voice and to not be shy and to get involved in local advocacy and things of that nature. And it really opened up my eyes in terms of seeing the discrimination and the disparities in our community, as well as on campus, because you could count on one hand how many young people from my high school were actually enrolled in that college. And believe me, to this day, I know some of them never made it. And that continues in some ways, sadly, to be the case. So I just want to tell young people that, hey, don't settle for what other people are saying or telling you. Question that. Question yourself. And then find people that you can connect with. And they may not all be from, say, from your family or your immediate neighborhood. There could be new people that you network and find that are going to be mentors. Mm-hmm. And they may not even be Latinos, but they may take an interest in what you're doing and help to guide you. So those to me are really important.
Exactly. I thank you so much for sharing that. I love this, you know, in public health, we always talk about population health and the power of the population, but we forget to mention the power of the individual, right? The way that we can influence one another by simply asking the question, like you said, are you going to college? What are you doing to do X, Y, Z, right? That influence to really transform someone's life. And I think all of us have those little angels, is what I like to call them, right? Who come in our life in very unique moments to really influence our thinking, and many times open doors that maybe wouldn't have been open for us.
Right. And I think that's so true, especially as you go through your life, because I mean, my trajectory after going to Cal Poly Pomona, I was encouraged to, you know, go on and get my master's degree. Mm-hmm. And that opened up another slew of opportunities because I went to USC, did my master's program in public administration, mm-hmm. but it was a unique program where I traveled. So I got to live in Washington, D.C. and learning about federal government. I wanted to go into public administration and actually thought about law school. That's mm-hmm. kind of where I really wanted to go. But I ended up doing the public administration venue. And I was interning in the Carter White House for the one of the first Latinos who was special assistant to President Carter. And when I worked there, I was a writer. I was actually doing his newsletter, editor for his newsletter. Yeah. And I got to meet a lot of interesting people and got to see the workings of how federal government works. But I also saw the disparities. Yeah. The fact that we didn't have a lot of Latinos in high positions. They didn't have access to good colleges, universities. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things that I had gone through, I saw how it was also pervasive across the country, which takes me to why I think, you know, after that experience, I came home and I said, you know what, I'm kind of turned off with politics and I want to focus on my job. And my first job was to go back and work with a state running a state education program regionally where I grew up to help young people go to college. Because I thought, to me, that's going to be the key to success, helping more young Latinos and Latinas and people who were first generation to prepare for college. So I did that for a couple of years. And while I did that, someone said, hey, Hilda, why don't you think about running for a college board at Rio Hondo College? And I thought, I don't know if I want to do that because, you know, it just seems so far-fetched. But there were a lot of people who encouraged me through my program that I ran, California Student Opportunity Access Program, that encouraged me and said, Hilda, you'd be perfect. Do it. Come on. You care about kids. You want to see more people reflected in the universities that look like you. This would be a good way to do it. And you understand what that means, a transition from high school to a community college and then transferring from there to a four-year university. Yes. So that's kind of where I landed. And then from there, people just kept encouraging me to run for higher office, and I ran for assembly. I won. I ran for Senate, became the first Latina ever to win state Senate, and spent about six years there. And then I ran for Congress. But before I ran for Congress, I did a lot of work in the legislature on health related issues, environmental justice issues, which impact our community health wise negatively. Especially when you live in surrounding areas that are polluted, contaminated, or you don't have access to open space and parks, and you have all these chronic illnesses because of where you live and the poor quality of care that you receive, or lack of care and health, and also nutritional values. You don't have a lot of good nutritional support systems there. So a lot of that impacted me while I was working in the legislature. And kind of something that came up was I was actually called by the Kennedy Foundation to receive the Kennedy Profile Encourage Award for my work on environmental justice, working on behalf of workers' rights, increasing the minimum wage statewide, but also advocating for women's rights and mostly Latinas, because there were very few of us that were serving in the state Senate. So that helped me propel also my other campaign to run for Congress, which to me was, you know, really tremendous, because there were a few Latinas there, but not really, not in any number, significant number. And I spent a lot of time. I spent 8 years there working on healthcare issues and eventually ended up on the subcommittee for energy and commerce on health. Mm-hmm. And I helped to create what they call the Tri-Caucus on healthcare. So that was Latinos, African Americans, and Asians. And I helped to lead that. And we would travel around the country and talk about health disparities that impact all people of color.
Yes. Yes. That's beautiful. And thank you for that transformative work. Your work is why we're here today and why we get to advocate for these issues and for health equity. And I'm sure I'm not the first to say this, but Supervisor Solis, we need you as president. We need you to run. We need a Latina president.
You know, I see that there are more Latinas now in Congress, and I'm happy about that. But I also think we need to look at the field team. Mm-hmm. So we need to populate Latinas in all sectors and in professions as well. So it's careers, it's in medicine, it's in corporate America, it's also in government, in law. And I really think that there's a good body, of folks that are now coming up to speed on that. And I'm so happy to see that our bounds are endless. We can't let what we think in our mind hold us back. We just have to keep projecting ourselves and surrounding ourselves with people who are positive.
Yeah.
And we'll share those opportunities.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the way to build a sustainable movement, right? When we continue to support each other, open doors for one another, making sure that if we hear of something and we have that comadre that would be perfect for that role, making sure that we plug people in.
Right. And I think for me, the best role I've had is that, I mean, if someone hadn't given me the opportunity to go intern in someone's office or go learn how to do these things, it wouldn't have presented itself to me in that way. So I always encourage people, even in my own office, and have to always bring in people of color that reflect my community. And I'm happy to say that even in the Congress and all my offices, I had Latinas in different positions. And that's how you help to mentor and open up those opportunities.
Exactly. And I love that you mentioned this partnership, right? With the Tri-Caucus, making sure that we're working hand in hand. Our communities have been pitted against each other for much too long. And we're finally saying, no, we need to help each other, because when we lift up one community, we're also lifting up all our other communities of color.
Right. And, you know, something that I'm reminded of is that when you get in these positions, you know, there's their own structures and the way things are not really set it formally, but informally. And part of it is being able to network and work across with other people that aren't necessarily from maybe your own state or your own neighborhood, but knowing that you can work with them on issues where you can come together and then work on legislation that impacts your community overall, but other parts of the country that everybody gains when we do that. And one of the things I want to say is that while I was in Congress, I was also the first Latina on the Energy and Commerce Committee to serve on the Health Committee, which at that time was working on the Affordable Care Act and universal health care, and really looking at how to fund more programs like the Prometoras and really looking at health navigators. So for example, the African American caucuses would be talking about healthcare for them. And we say, wait a minute, we are at the same place with you. And we also happen to have people who are immigrants who are undocumented, but are here, and their children are mixed families. And we have to provide protections and assistance to them in the healthcare arena. So I really enjoyed being able to work on a lot of those issues, childcare issues, and also looking at providing better healthcare insurance for coverage and making sure that those conditions that are so prevalent, diabetes treatment, asthma, cancer, that all of that we could think about getting proportionate funds of money set aside for strategic areas in the country to focus on our community in particular, and especially for immigrant low-skilled workers that are working in hazardous conditions that need to know how that impacts them and their families, because that is something that I think we still have to insist upon, because I've seen it now with the migration of many of our Latino families that come from, say, not just Mexico, but say Central America or South America, that are migrating up to Midwestern states and are facing some of the challenges that we've already dealt with here in California.
Yes.
And that is, you know, the fact that they work in industries very young that are harmful to their health.
Yes.
And I think that they're not aware of that. Yep. And so I think we have a lot of work to do on a national level still.
Yes, yes. And I love that you mentioned the promotoras, right? We've been talking a lot about formal positions of power, but there's also informal positions of power. Mm-hmm. And our promotoras hold that, right? There are community leaders getting at the word, making sure that our folks are vaccinated, that they have access to healthcare, mm-hmm. or know how to navigate the systems. And mm-hmm. we have to fight for justice for them so that they get paid well and that they have career pipelines, right? And right. a lot of the work that you have done has been to do that as well.
And we continue here in the county. You know, we were hit pretty hard by the pandemic, COVID. Mm-hmm. And one of the realities was that they were hit hard too, the promotoras.
Yes.
But many continued on their work to go out and as I like to say, boots on the ground, going yeah. to the barrios, going to our communities, going to the churches mm-hmm. and sharing information about how to access PPE, what protective mm-hmm. things you needed to do to help your family, where to go to get resources for food, because so many things were closing down and we had food distributions. The promotoras were there. Yes. They even helped us at one of our big general hospitals here, where we actually were able to take care of senior citizens who came up, took the bus, two or three buses, just to get wow. healthcare, but they needed that other assistance to help them navigate where mm-hmm. to go, who to speak to, and to have maybe an interpreter with them.
Yes.
So all of that, I think, just recently in the last few years, it has become even more important.
Yes.
And it tells me that we have a big gap in our healthcare system, and we just need to continue to fight for them. And I say that because yes. the governor in California just disclosed his budget, mm-hmm. and there are going to be tremendous cuts in terms of prevention. And in this particular area, I'm fearful that the promotoras are going to be the first ones that will be let go. And that we can't allow that to happen because it took years to build this up.
I completely agree. And again, they protect the health and well-being of our communities. And if you care about healthcare, if you protect the health of your communities, you're also in turn protecting the economy. So it's a cycle, yeah. right? You can't cut the pieces mm-hmm. that protect ultimately our health and our economy.
Right. And I see them as valuable, not just in that arena, but also with our mental health.
Mm-hmm.
They are now being, assigned to work in our Department of Mental Health and helping even with street, going out in the street, dealing with yes. homeless people, because out here in LA, majority of the homeless are Latinos.
Yes.
Half of those single males or women, what have you, are Latinos. And now we're seeing a lot of migrant families coming up
yeah.
that are just sleeping on the streets and not understanding where to go and how to navigate the system. So we're also using that model to reach mm-hmm. those families. And we need to do more.
Yes.
Now is not the time to cut back on this, because eventually, if we don't take care of these individuals, we're the safety net in the county of LA that, you know, the county
exactly.
is, they're going to end up in our emergency room that's going to mm-hmm. cost us four or five times more.
Yes.
So prevention is the key. Promotoras is the key.
Yes, I love that. Prevention and promotoras, that's the key. And I really like this urgency that you're bringing to the conversation, right? We talk about the health equity movement and the many years it's taken to get to where we are today. In yeah. your experience, what is left to do? How do we finally achieve health equity for our communities?
Well, I think, first of all, when we think about promotoras, we've got to think about language access.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones that we entrust in many ways, and getting healthcare professionals who speak our language and mm-hmm. understand that there are distinctions between our cultures as well.
Yeah.
And making sure that we have a field team, that we get people educated to get into those fields and professions,
yeah.
but also making sure that we continue to expand the work that we're doing with promotoras and even with younger people
yes.
on campuses, on college campuses as well. I mean, I can't begin to tell you how some Latinos are not even aware
mm-hmm.
of healthcare access opportunities on their college campuses
mm-hmm.
and seeking that out. That's equally important. I think language access for me is still, unfortunately, a big barrier. And I see it here in the county of Los Angeles, one of the largest. We're the largest county in the entire country. And there are many departments that don't have even interpreters at the level that you would think necessary to address the needs of mm-hmm. our population. We represent 10 million people. Latinos make up close to 50%. Mm-hmm. When you think about that, half of that population are women or Latinas or females. Yeah. Why are we not focusing on prevention and outreach to these communities? And we're finding also that there are many different dialects that are being spoken, indigenous dialects, mm-hmm. and we're having issues there where our departments are not appropriately understanding the voices of these particular indigenous languages that are being spoken by these populations, Guatemala, mm-hmm. Mexico, talking about, you know, various things that have come up lately. And it can end up ending in a bad situation mm-hmm. because you misinterpreted or you thought that person needed some help. You didn't understand them right. and they didn't get the right treatment or assistance they needed, or their child was taken away from them.
Exactly.
Because child services thought that you were neglecting your child. And in fact, you just couldn't articulate that you are living in poverty, mm-hmm. that you're a domestic violence victim, that you have lack of access to healthcare and all these things. So, I mean, I think there's still a long way to go. And part of what I'm trying to do is create opportunities in the county. We actually developed an Office of Immigrant Affairs mm-hmm. a couple of years ago. And it started out one piece at a time yes. because not everybody was sold on it. Why is it necessary? We should be helping everybody, Hilda. Yes. And I'm like, well, no, we need to help our population. Mm-hmm. And they're not accessing our services appropriately. So we did create an office, and they provided a legal assistance when yeah. necessary. They've also advocated for the rights of immigrants and families. And when we went through the pandemic, many yeah. of them went through hardships. They had small businesses. Many of them lost those businesses. Mm-hmm. We went out, boots on the ground, and tried to identify many of them to apply for internal grants that they would not be penalized for because they were not citizens. Yeah. Now, and I'm not saying all of them, but I'm just saying a good portion of them. So we did as much as we could, but we still have to do much, much more in that way. And to continue to tell people, and this is still something that's still very vivid in my mind, is that mm-hmm. a lot of Latinos won't go in, for example, and get healthcare screenings right. that they deserve or their children vaccinations because they fear their immigration status, the public charge is mm-hmm. going to impact their immigration status, mm-hmm. which is a big misnomer. So that's why it's important to have advocacy groups, community-based yes. groups, promotoras, to help explain to people, no, yes. you do have every right to these services. And here are references for you to utilize in your language.
Exactly. Thank you for that. I think what really resonated with me is this intersectional identities, right? In our community, as Latine and indigenous communities, we make up 40% of the population in California. We're extremely diverse. And mm-hmm. many times that gets lost, right? When we talk about just Latinos as a whole. So we really need to dig deeper, because those health disparities that we're talking about in terms of access, in terms of all the things, healthcare, hide in those intersectional mm-hmm. identities. When we dig deeper into Latinas, when we dig deeper into indigenous communities, those disparities are exacerbated even more within our Latino group.
Right. And, you know, we're not even, I mean, I should mention, we also have a challenge in providing for LGBTQ+ and trans mm-hmm. Latinas and mm-hmm. Latinos. And that's something that is really, I think, taking a different, it's something else that's growing, and we need to address it because yeah. we see mental distress, trauma, suicide. Yeah. We see many of these young people turned out from their homes yeah. and there's no housing or sufficient services that are provided for them mm-hmm. in their communities that you think should be made available. They're not. And they're even segregated in terms of regionally they are placed. So we mm-hmm. need to do much, much more and educate our own community and our parents about that as well. So again, it's just more opening up that door and, mm-hmm. and providing the information and doing it in a manner that is easily understood
yeah.
without any threat, you know, just kind of letting people understand and sharing their stories. I think that yes. to me is so compelling. You know, just today I was out at one of our interim housing sites uh-huh. that I'd helped to develop. We house about 232 people right around, not too far from Skid Row downtown.
Yeah.
And a good number of people that are going there for help are Latinos and older women. Yes. And one man, middle age, I had a conversation and asked him, well, how long were you out on the street? He said, I was out on the street for about 7 years because I was taking drugs and alcohol abuse. And I became separated from my family. Mm. But now that I've been here for almost 8 months, I am sober. I am reuniting with my family. I have a little part-time job. Mm. I'm able to meet my appointments with my medical providers and also with my mental health providers. And he was just fluent in Spanish. He could not speak English, but that gives me some reassurances that these kinds of services help and they can work.
Oh, yes. They're transformational many times. And mm-hmm. you talk about this intersection of mental health, behavioral health, substance use, and, you know, mental health really and preventive care around mental health is pretty new. There has been so much stigma in our communities that it is only until recently that we've been more open to seeking care and making sure that we're verbalizing, I go to a psychologist, I go to a therapist, and that is the norm. We have to take care of our mental health the way that we take care of our physical health.
Yes. And you know, something that I have come across too, since I've been on the board here at LA County, is I now represent most of Skid Row. And there's this big misnomer that it's all just like African Americans. It's not. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of Latinos and older women. Yes. And we focused on a study that we did with the Downtown Women's Center to focus on women that live on Skid Row. And we found that there are a lot of elderly Latina women who, through no fault of their own, became widows, lost their property, their families moved away, they were abandoned, and they're living on the streets in Skid Row. Yep. And we're trying to help with this special program to infuse funding to reach out to them, to put them in motels, hotels, but with wraparound services. And, you know, it's just amazing to me that I want to see, for lack of information that isn't shared with the public about what our community is facing, and that it's not something to be ashamed of, but to help people find assistance and help. Yes. And there's, you know, there's nothing worse than to say these people deserve what they get. They don't need any help. That is the wrong kind of attitude. Right. There is a place for them. They have families. Exactly. They also have given of their life. Some of the women that I have met have worked in good professional jobs, but maybe they were a domestic violence victim. They got beat up and traumatized and they had to flee and were left with nothing. Exactly. So those are the stories that I think we need to lift up as well. Yes. When we talk about healthcare, mental health, and creating housing, secure neighborhoods where people can feel wanted and that they have affordable or low-income housing set aside for them and their children.
100%. And, you know, I think that really resonates with me, the compassion, the empathy that we have towards one another and our different stories, right? This is the right thing to do, to take care of one another. And the state is only as strong as our most vulnerable. And so we really, if we want to continue being the golden state, right, and leading the country in the health equity world, we need to continue to do that intentional work.
And we have to be inclusive. We can't just talk about it. We really have to, for those people that can make decisions, either in their place of work as leaders or advocates, they need to continue to just not give up and be relentless. And that's, you know, that's what I see also in our community, that there's this thirst to want to know. And if we can fill that gap, if we can fill that in an appropriate manner and way, we can be a force to be reckoned with. We can be just as powerful as any other special interest group, but we shouldn't be special interest group because we're half 40% of the California population. We need to vote. We need to get good leaders in those positions. We need to also have good policymakers, and we need to have people that understand and can do research on our community.
Yes.
Because even there, the lack of research on Latino culture, in terms of how you treat us, in terms of healthcare, healthcare models, has to evolve. It has to change. It's still kind of stuck in maybe the 70s and 80s. And so much has happened. And there's so many things we could do to prevent these diseases, cancer, illnesses.
Yes.
And just by changing behavior, nutrition, and attitudes, right? And it starts with our young kids, exactly. Starting from there at the school, at preschool, mm-hmm. teaching them better options in eating and exercise, right? Yes. And being outdoors. And I think those are things that we've gotten away from. Mm-hmm. We really have.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's such an important way to land our conversation today, right? Reminding folks of their individual power, leaving our listeners today with that little seed. How can you mm-hmm. influence change today in whatever platform of influence that you are? And be it with your coworkers and extending a hand there, or if you are in a formal position of power, what mm-hmm. policies are you pursuing to ensure that all of our communities are doing better?
Right. And, you know, I've just seen so many good things that our community is doing. Unfortunately, we don't always get the headlines in the news or the print media or whatever it might be. So we have to kind of create our own venues. And this is, you know, this is a perfect example of what you're doing at Tu Salud. You know, the fact that you have your own podcast is yeah. great. We need to do more of that. I think there's a big thirst for it too. So, you know, I applaud you and really that, you know, you're taking up the banner for so many other young Latinas. You're a role model for young Latinas as well. And they need to see that, hear you, and maybe, you know, engage them as well.
Yes. Thank you.
Challenge them.
Yes. No, I appreciate that so much. And, you know, to that point, we're trying to transform the narrative, right? Many times Latinos, indigenous communities get the, pobrecitos narrative. But no, we're powerful. We're amazing. We're a vibrant community. And we need to display that amazingness that we are.
The confidence,
yeah,
to be confident and know who we are, and that's something that I think comes with experience sometimes, but it also comes through, you know, you fall but you get up,
yeah,
you fall but you get up, and you learn from that, and you gain more confidence, and you then are able to share that with other people, and they then want to emulate that or say, wow, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could have that position, supervisor. Maybe I could be that congresswoman. Maybe I could be that healthcare advocate or promotora. Yes. Or I want to get involved in that.
Exactly.
You know, so a new venue, you know, that's going to help them heal, mm-hmm. but also give back.
Yeah.
Also give back.
100%. Well, with those beautiful words, thank you so much for joining us today. It was such an honor to have this conversation with you. And again, para adelante juntos, ¿verdad?
Yes, y con ganas.
Con ganas.
Sí se puede.
Sí se puede. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I look forward to hearing more about the good work you're doing.